So, so I've derived this model that's dual to the XY model last time. So it's integral from minus to plus infinity product over I d phi I sum over M E to minus T divided by 2J sum over I and mu delta mu phi I squared minus 2 pi I sum over I phi I M I. Okay, so phi's are real fields and M's are integers, which are defined on the, so both are defined on the sides of the dual lattice, right? And so now we want to see what the physical meaning of those variables are. So as we'll see, in particular, the variables M will have the physical meaning of the vorticities. Okay, so these are the variables that are associated with vortices. Okay, and so to do that, to see the physical meaning of M's, what I want to do now is integrate out phi. So integrate over phi and obtain a model that's written only in terms of M's. Okay? So for this reason, I've rewritten this term here, the term that's quadratic in phi, in terms of the inverse correlation function of phi's. Right, so I have T over 2J sum over I and mu delta mu phi I squared. I can write this in the following way as 1/2 sum over I and J phi I G I J inverse phi J. Right, where this matrix Gij inverse has the following form. So Gij inverse is equal to T divided by J. And then, so I will have, as I explained last time, I will have terms which are diagonal in phi here, so proportional to phi I squared. And so the corresponding entry into this matrix is going to be proportional to delta ij, and the coefficient is 4 if you do this carefully. So 4 delta ij. And then I will also have terms which are proportional to products of phi's on nearest neighbor sides. Okay? And so those will give me terms like this. So sum over mu delta j I plus mu plus delta j I minus mu. Okay? And so to invert this matrix, what I really want to calculate is g I j, okay? Because when I integrate over phi's, what I will get is roughly m I Gij Mj, right? That's how we do Gaussian integrals. So I want to invert this matrix, and the way to do this is Fourier transform, right? Because Fourier transform diagonalizes this matrix, and then inversion becomes easy. Okay, so let me work out the Fourier transform. So I have Gij. Let's say G inverse of Q. Right, so this is going to be equal to 1 over n, where n is the number of total number of sides on the dual lattice, sum over I and j, e to minus I q dot xi minus xj, the coordinates of the sides I and j, and then g I j inverse. Right, so the usual lattice Fourier transform, the same, exactly the same as we did for the discussed Ising model. So now when we do the Fourier transform, clearly this delta ij term is going to give us something that's independent of Q, right? Basically something that's proportional to one, right? While those terms, right, those will give us something that's proportional to E to I Q dot mu, right? Because what I have here is Q dot xi minus xj, and here xi minus xj is proportional to either mu, vector mu, or vector minus mu, okay? So then the answer is the following. So I have T divided by J. So this delta I J just gives me 4, right? And then those terms simply give me a cosine of, you know, either QX times A, where A is the lattice constant, or QY times A, right? Because mu's are either X hat or Y hat. So I'm summing over nearest neighbor vectors on the lattice. So the answer here is 4 minus 2 cosine QXA minus 2 cosine QYA. Okay. So this is G inverse of Q. So therefore, G of Q is just 1 over this. And I can then find GIJ by Fourier transforming this back to real space. So I have 1 over n, then j divided by t, and then sum over I and j, e to I q, sum over q, of course, e to I q dot xi minus xj, divided by this thing. So 4 minus 2 cosine QXA minus 2 cosine QYA. Okay. So, you know, this is in principle some complicated thing, but if I'm interested in how this behaves at relatively long distances, longer than the lattice spacing, then we can find a fairly simple form for it. So let me assume that I'm interested in the behavior of GIJ when the distance xi minus xj is much greater than the lattice spacing. Yeah?
Real quick, going back to cosine qxa, why is it not cosine qx times 2a? Because mu gives you the distance a, so you have mu and minus mu.
Yeah, so mu and minus mu precisely gives me cosine, right? So mu gives me e to I q a, and minus mu gives me e to minus I q a. So e to I q a plus e to minus I q a, that gives me cosine. So in this case, only small q's contribute, right? If I'm interested in the Fourier, in this function that at large arguments, so long distances translate into small q's, right? And so therefore, I can expand the cosines here to leading order in q, okay? Which gives me just q squared. So then I get so this is approximately equal to g I j approximately J divided by T, so 1 over N, sum over Q, E to I Q dot XI minus XJ. And then here I have, so 4 minus, so just Q squared times A squared, right? And so now I can transform this this sum over Q into an integral, right? I just multiply this n by a squared and multiply here by a squared. So this is 1 divided by v. And 1 over v sum goes over into integral over q divided by 2 pi squared, right? So this is equal to j a squared divided by t. Let me pull out this 4, also 4t, integral d to q 2 pi squared e to I q dot xi minus xj. So 1 minus q squared a squared. No, sorry, I screwed up, of course, so I forgot the ones that are coming from the cosines, right? So, and I forgot the minus, the plus sign. So actually this 4 disappears and I just get this, right? Yeah. There is no 4 here, sorry. Yeah, so it's just this. And this a squared is canceled by this a squared. Okay. Now it's better. Okay, so this integral, so if I first integrate, do the angular part, right, so I get j divided by t, 1 divided by 4 pi squared, integral from 0 to pi d phi, and then integral from 0 to some cut off, let me just write it as 1 over a, but it's something of order, 1 over a, and then dq times q, e to I q, xi minus xj modulus times cosine phi divided by q squared, right? So that integral over angle gives me a Bessel function of, you know, zeroth order. So this whole thing is equal to j divided by 2 pi t. So one of the 1 power of 1 over 2 pi goes into the Bessel function. And then integral from 0 to 1 over a, j 0 of q times xi minus xj divided by q dq, okay? Now, unfortunately, this integral diverges at the lower limit, okay? And the origin of this divergence is easy to understand. So basically, you know, since as we will see, those amps can be associated with the vortex winding numbers, then there will be a divergent term coming from this gij when I is equal to j, right? When I is equal to j, this simply gives me the self-energy of the vortex, right? Which, as we saw, diverges logarithmically with the system size, right? And it's actually precisely a logarithmic divergence here for this integral. So I could cut this off here by 1 over L. Then this would give me a finite answer, but I'm not going to do that because we don't care about that self-energy of the vortex. I'll just do the following thing. Instead of gij, I will calculate the difference, I'll write gij in the following way as g0, right? That's gij when I is equal to j. Sorry, I will write it as gij minus g0 and then plus g0. Leave g0 as something, which I will ignore, right? But then calculate this difference, okay? If I calculate this difference, what it does is it just puts minus 1 in here, right? Minus 1 here, minus 1 here, and therefore just minus 1 here. And this integral converges. Okay. It converges and it gives me this integral is just a log of the distance. So minus j divided by 2 pi t, and then log of xi minus xj divided by a. Okay. So then, okay, so now we can do this integral over phi. So if I do the integral over phi, I get the following. So z is going to be equal to up to prefactors, which don't matter, as usual, sum over m's, right, of e to minus 2 pi squared. So the minus 2 pi squared times 1/2. So 2 pi squared is this 2 pi I squared, right? And then sum over I and j, m I g I j m j. So I've simply done the Gaussian integral, right? And the sign is different because of the I over there. And so then I get, taking into account this result that we've just obtained, this is equal to sum over m. So I get 2 pi squared divided by 2 pi, so just pi, and the sign is plus, so e to pi j divided by t, sum over I and j, m I, m j, log x I minus x j divided by a. Okay, and this is precisely the potential energy of the plasma that we have derived before from kind of hand waving considerations, right? So this is why I can identify m's with the vortex winding numbers. Okay. Mm-hmm.
So here you calculated g i j minus g zero, right?
Mm-hmm.
But are we using the same equation for the partition function? Or not just g i j?
Right. Sorry.
Why are we using?
Well, I mean, so g zero is going to give me some prefactor here, which in principle diverges. This just represents the energy of the vortex, right? In the in that discussion, when I calculated this partition function of the plasma, I did not take into account the energy of the vortex, right? I only took into account the interaction of the vortices with themselves. Okay. But we are not actually going to analyze this thing. We will analyze that thing where everything is included. So it's all fine. This is just to understand what the physical meaning of the variables is. Okay. So anyway, so m's, m I are the vortex winding numbers or vortex charges. Okay, so now let's go back to this model. Actually, I want to do is in fact use phi's as my primary variables instead of m's, because phi's are real. I mean, that's the reason we in fact introduced phi's, because they are real, and then we can do the usual RG procedure to analyze this model. Okay. So let me erase this. Okay, so what I really want to deal with this thing. And so now let me It will seem to you like a dirty trick, but it's actually fine, okay? So let me modify this thing in the following way, okay? So I'll say what I do, and then we'll discuss why I can do that. So I will add to that action in the exponential, I will add the following term. Some constant, epsilon c, divided by t, times sum over I, mi squared, okay? Which is going to represent, basically the energy, the core energy of a vortex, of each vortex, okay? So it's some constant, EC, which has dimensions of energy and which will have the meaning of the core energy, times the charge of the vortex squared. Okay, so why should I do that? Well, the reason is that, as we'll see later, so when we do RG on this model, right, what we will do is, we will divide again the modes, the Fourier components of phi, into slow modes and fast modes, and integrate over the fast modes, right? So that procedure is going to generate new terms in there, okay? And so in particular, one of the terms is going to generate is precisely this one, okay? So since it's going to be generated anyway, I might as well just add this term from the beginning, right? It's perfectly fine, believe me. It will simply allow me to bring this partition function to a nicer form. But it's perfectly fine, if I assume that it will be generated, right? Transform this to something, and then it will indeed be generated. Then it means that my assumption is correct. Okay, if I don't run into contradictions, it means that my assumption is correct. Okay.
So that will be the one that we generate.
So this term will be generated, and it will be important. It will be relevant.
The core energy then now takes the role of a new parameter in the RG.
In the RG we will have. So right now we have just one parameter, right? It's T over J. The ratio is only the temperature.
However, you're saying that by making the RG transformation, that term is generated, right?
Yeah.
But what that core energy is a finite number, or is basically the divergence that we have here support?
No, it's going to be the E to minus C over T is going to be like fugacity or vortices. And that's gonna determine the density of the vortices. So basically, below for t less than tkt, the density of the vortices goes to zero under RG, right? Because they are all bound into vortex anti-vortex pairs, and under coarse graining, that distance decreases, and eventually, you don't see any vortices or anti-vortices. So that will flow to zero. Okay. Not this, but the fugacity, so e to minus e c over t. Meaning that the core energy will flow to infinity. Yeah. So in this sense, it's consistent with what we've done before. While above tkt, this is going to flow to infinity. Okay. The fugacity is going to flow to infinity, meaning basically that you will have free vortices appearing, right? And under coarse graining transformation, the distance between the vortices is going to become smaller and smaller, which means that the density will grow. Okay. Okay.
So, in the first case, less than the critical temperature, your argument was that the vortices are paired, and so when you shrink the lattice, it looks like they've disappeared.
Yeah. Well, it's just so another way you can think about this is, so So the vortices are paired into vortex anti-vortex pairs, and if you look from short distance, you see them. But if you look from a large distance, you don't. Right? So, okay. So let me just add this thing to the partition function. So I have now z equals integral from minus infinity to infinity. Let me actually write here. So z equals integral from minus to plus infinity, product over I, d phi I, and then sum over m. So e to minus t divided by 2j, sum over I and mu, delta mu phi I squared minus 2 pi I, sum over I, phi I, mi, and then minus e sub c divided by t, sum over I, mi squared, okay? And let me, actually introduce this parameter now, which I'll call vortex fugacity, and which will play, which has basically exactly the same meaning as fugacity in the theory of ideal gases, right? When you do theory of ideal gases at high temperature, right, you can expand in fugacity, which is basically proportional to the density times the thermal wavelength. That's a small parameter in this virial expansion, right? So vortex fugacity is basically has exactly the same meaning. So I'll call this y. And this is going to be equal to E minus EC over T, right? So small y means low vortex density, okay? Large y is large vortex density. So this is, you can think of this as basically being proportional to the vortex density. I can rewrite this term in just the following way. This is simply y. So this exponential is multiplied by y to the power mi squared. Okay. And we will use this parameter y as our small parameter, basically. Okay. So y, we will see that y is going to flow to zero, as we discussed, below the critical temperature. So it's the fixed point value of y is zero everywhere below, right? And so if we are near, if I'm interested in what happens near the critical temperature, as we always are, then we can treat y as a small parameter since the density of vortices is small, okay? So what this parameter, technically what this allows me to do, the introduction of this term allows me to do is now sum explicitly over m, right, and eliminate m. So what do I get? So let's sum over m for a particular I, let's say, so sum over mi from minus to plus infinity of e to minus 2 pi I, phi I, mi, times y to mi squared, right? So this is equal to approximately. The leading term is 1 when m is equal to 0. Then, so when m is equal to plus and minus 1, I get plus 2y cosine 2 pi phi I, right? Then when m is equal to plus and minus 2, I get 2y squared cosine 4 pi phi I, and so on. So plus 2y squared cosine 4 pi phi I, right? And since so I'm treating y as a small parameter now, I'm assuming that y is small, and therefore I will ignore all the higher order terms in y, okay? And let me now write this. So again, assuming that y is small, I can just re-exponentiate this 1 plus 2y cosine 2 pi phi I, and get so e to 2y cosine 2 pi phi I. Okay? So this is okay at small y. And so then I get z is equal to integral minus to plus infinity product over I d phi I e to minus s, which depends only on phi now, and s of phi is equal to so t divided by 2j sum over I and mu delta mu phi I squared, right? And then minus 2y sum over I cosine of 2 pi phi I. Mm-hmm.
Why is the third term y squared?
Well, I will throw it out. I don't need it. It's y to the fourth. Yeah, of course. Sorry. But I'm throwing it out anyway. Okay, so now, I mean, this depends only on the real. This is a functional of a real variable, phi. And so I can easily now take continuum limit for this, right? So let's take the continuum limit. So I'm going to replace sum over I times sum over I will replace by 1 divided by a squared integral d to x, right? And then d mu phi I is going to be a times d phi dx mu, right? And so then I get the following continuum limit. S of phi is equal to integral d to x so here you know the a squared from the integral and the a squared from the derivative just cancel each other, so I get the same coefficient t divided by 2j grad phi squared, and then I get minus 2y a minus 2 cosine of 2 pi phi. Okay, and let me now do the following. So let me define a dimensionless temperature by absorbing this j into temperature, right? So I'll remove this j from here. And then let me also redefine y so that this a is absorbed into y, right? So I have minus 2y cosine 2 pi phi, okay? So this is called sine Gordon model. So, well, Gordon is a guy, and sine is the, I guess, when you vary this, if you want to find the saddle point equations, this cosine will turn into a sine, and so that's this sine. Okay? And so, this sine Gordon model we can analyze by our standard methods, by RG. Now, one complication here compared to the phi to the fourth theory is that we cannot Fourier transform, right? Because we have this cosine here, right? And we have to, it's important that it's cosine. We have to keep this as cosine because that, well, it's the same cosine as the cosine that was in our, in our original XY model, right? So it basically expresses the 2 pi periodicity and the fact that the vortex winding numbers are integers. So it's important to keep this as cosine without expanding. Okay? So it means that we have to do RG now in real space without Fourier transforming. Okay? But what will help us is the fact that we will assume that y is a small parameter, okay, and I can expand in y. So let me sketch the derivation of the RG equation. So I'm not going to go through all the painful details here, but we'll just kind of, yeah.
In the case of RG momentum space, we rely on the fact that we can divide into fast and slow modes.
Yeah, well, we'll do the same thing here. You can still divide phi into fast and slow modes.
However, yes, I mean, this characterization of fast and slow modes only makes sense on Fourier on the momentum.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, I can still, of course, Fourier transform, right? I can imagine that I can Fourier transform, but it's just not useful to do that, right? I mean, but I can still, of course, write phi of x. As you know, so integral from 0 to lambda over b, d to k, 2 pi squared, phi of k, e to I, k dot x, and that's going to be my slow modes plus the fast modes. So I will do that, but I will not explicitly go to Fourier space. Okay, so d to k, 2 pi squared phi of k e to I k dot x, but I'll just write it as phi less of x plus phi greater of x, okay? But what is meant by this is the same thing as before, okay? Okay, so let's go through a few steps at least of this transformation. I divide into fast and slow modes, and so then the partition function is going to be integral over the fast modes and integral over the slow modes. So of e to minus t over 2 integral d to x. As before, the Gaussian part just separates into independent contributions from the fast and slow modes. I get minus t over 2 grad phi less squared plus grad phi greater squared, right? And then I have e to plus 2y again, integral d to x, and then cosine of 2 pi, pi less of x, forget about x, pi less plus phi greater, right? And so this I will now expand in powers of y, right? So I'll have, so this is approximately equal to integral d phi less d phi greater e to minus t over 2 integral d to x. So grad phi less squared plus grad phi greater squared times 1 plus 2y integral d to x cosine of 2 pi phi less of x plus phi greater of x. And then, I will expand to second order plus 2y squared, right? And then I will have a double integral, integral d to x, d to x prime. And then cosine of 2 pi phi less of x plus phi greater of x times cosine of 2 pi phi less of x prime plus phi greater of x prime. Okay. Right. So now, I want to separate phi less and phi greater here, so I can write cosine of 2 pi phi less plus phi greater using this trigonometric formula as cosine 2 pi phi less, right, times cosine of 2 pi phi greater minus sine of 2 pi phi less times sine of 2 pi phi greater, right? So now what I will have to do is integrate just as before, just as we did for the phi to the fourth model, integrate over phi greater, right? Average over phi greater. Now, since this Gaussian part is quadratic in phi greater, right? Then, so as usual, all the terms which are odd functions all of phi greater are going to disappear after averaging. So things like the first power of sine of phi greater, right, are going to disappear. So if I take this into account here, then so what remains after I take into account that all, okay, so odd powers of odd functions of phi greater disappear, after integration. So then I get the following result. So let me introduce again Z0, which is going to be integral d phi greater of the e2 minus the Gaussian part t over 2 integral d2x grad phi greater squared, right? So then in terms of this z0, I will get z equals z0 times integral d phi less e minus t over 2 integral d to x grad phi less squared, right? And then, so in the curly brackets, I'm going to have averages, right? And so the terms that will be non-zero are the following. So one is obviously going to contribute plus. So from the linear term, I will get. So this thing will survive, but this one will not, right? Because this is proportional to sine of phi greater. So I get 1 plus 2y integral d2x cosine of 2 pi phi less of x times the average of cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x, average with respect to the Gaussian action of the fast modes, right? And then, so from the quadratic part, the following is going to survive. There will be two terms proportional basically to the product of cosines and then the product of sines. So I'll have plus 2y squared integral d2x d2x prime. And then, so I'll have two terms, cosine of 2 pi phi less of x, cosine of 2 pi phi less of x prime, times average of the product of cosines for the fast fields. So cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x, cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x prime, 0, and then plus the same thing, but with signs. Okay, so let me just leave it out. But so plus, same with cosine replaced by sine. Okay. So let me now rewrite this in terms of propagators of the fast modes, right? So I will introduce the propagator of the fast modes in real space. So x minus x prime. So this is going to be, let me include the factor of 2 pi squared in there for convenience. 2 pi squared and then average of phi greater of x, phi greater of x prime with respect to the Gaussian action. So then, for example, if I take this average, of cosine here, I can write this in the following way. So I have average of cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x. So I can write cosine as a sum of two exponentials, right? So this is 1/2 average of e to 2 pi I phi greater of x plus e to minus 2 pi I phi greater of x, right? And here I can use the result, which we have already used, that for when I have a variable, which is so when I calculate an average of e to some variable which has a which is Gaussian distributed, right? This average is equal to e to minus 1/2 average minus 1/2 times the first cumulant, basically. Okay, so this is equal to 1/2 times 2, because I will get the same result from this exponential and this exponential, e to minus 2 pi squared times 1/2 times average of phi greater of x squared, and that's just the propagator taken at the zero argument, right? And I think since I've included the factor of 1/2 there, so it's going to be the factor of 2 pi squared in there, it's just minus 1/2 g greater of 0. Right? Okay, and in the same, in exactly the same way, so I'll start skipping details now. In exactly the same way, these averages can also be expressed in terms of exponentials of propagators. Yeah.
Can you repeat the argument you used there? Do you just make expansion of the cumulant to second order?
No, it's just that for, so if I have a random variable phi, right, then average of e to phi, if phi obeys Gaussian distribution, which it is in this case, then this is equal to e to minus 1/2 phi squared minus phi average squared, right? So only the first cumulant, only the second cumulant actually survives. Okay? Actually, sorry, so it's even simpler than that. I must assume that average of phi is zero, which again it is in this case, so it's just this. So we used that when we calculated the correlation function, right, in the XY model, assuming that theta is just a real variable. Yeah.
So in the case of the ICM model, we had this argument about higher powers of phi becoming irrelevant. That's what we only want the second cumulant. Or is there?
No, or, I mean, the cumulant expansion was for a general random variable, right? Right.
But I'm saying how far we go in the expansion.
Just exact. Okay. All the higher cumulants disappear. I mean, you know, in the case when we did the 4 minus epsilon expansion, we weren't actually averaging just e to phi, right? We were averaging some e to s interaction, so that was more complicated. That's why we, in principle, had to expand to higher orders. Okay, so then let me just write down the results that you get for those averages. So I get, the average of cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x cosine of 2 pi phi greater of x prime. In exactly the same way, you find that this is equal to e to minus g greater of 0 times hyperbolic cosine of g greater of x minus x prime. And then for the sine, it's the same thing, but with the hyperbolic sine. Okay. So, well, I'll not even write it. It's not important. Okay. So then I get the following result for for my partition function after I integrate over phi greater. okay, so let me again, let me, so what I will get there is Z, right, as this kind of expansion in powers of Y, and I will again re-exponentiate those Y terms using the smallness of Y to get the new action for the slow fields. Okay, so let me now write down the result for the action. So I have S of phi less. So now it has the following form. The Gaussian part G over 2 integral g to x grad phi less squared. Right? Then I will have the linear term, so minus 2y. So integral g to x cosine of 2 pi phi less of x, and then this this exponential then this thing, which is the average of cosine of 2 pi phi greater. So e to minus 1/2 g greater of 0, okay. And then from the quadratic terms, I will get minus y squared e to minus g greater of 0, double integral d to x d to x prime cosine of 2 pi phi less of x plus 2 pi phi less of x prime times hyperbolic cosine so this actually becomes not the hyperbolic cosine, but e to minus g greater of x minus x prime minus 1. I mean, the reason is this re-exponentiation, because I have terms of both first order and the second order in y, right? When I re-exponentiate, I have to be careful because there will be contribution to y squared here actually coming from the first order terms in y downstairs, okay? So it's a little subtle. That's why, you know, instead of just hyperbolic cosine and hyperbolic sine, I have these things now, okay? Okay, so this, and then plus the sine. So sine of 2 pi phi less of x plus 2 pi phi less of x prime, and then actually the same prefactor. So here I get not the sine, but the cosine of the difference. So I already forgot the details. So this is going to be cosine of the sum, and then the cosine of the difference, and then the same almost the same prefactor, but e to plus g greater of x minus x prime. Minus 1. So, I mean, perhaps, you know, you should work those details out in your tutorial to feel comfortable, okay? Okay? So clearly this term, right, is just the new, you know, 2y cosine of 2 pi phi term, right? And this term, in fact, renormalizes the temperature. So the way to show this is that So if you expand now, so you know, these exponentials of g greater of x minus x prime are functions of x minus x prime, which decay very fast as the distance between x minus x prime increases. Okay, for this reason, you can expand those cosines, right? Assuming that x and x prime are close, right? To write, let's say, x prime as x minus x prime plus x prime, sorry, x prime minus x plus x, and expand in x minus x prime. So that's going to produce gradients of phi less, right? And so the terms that will survive will be proportional to gradients of phi less squared. And so these terms will, in fact, renormalize t. Okay? But let me, again, skip the...
both of them, or just the...
Yeah, both of them. Yeah. So both of those terms will renormalize t. Okay. They will be part of this thing that will vanish after integration over x and x prime, and the one that doesn't vanish will still renormalize t. Okay. So it's still going to be proportional to grad of phi less squared. Okay.
Mm-hmm. So that we introduced this capacity for the vortices because apparently when you do RG, terms like this appear, right?
Right.
But if I don't introduce that term and I go to the continuum limit, I'm somehow with just a fit theory.
Well, if you don't introduce this term, then I can't really sum over M, right? That's the problem. So if I don't introduce this term, it's difficult for me to take continuum limit. I can still imagine doing the same calculation on a lattice. That's fine. I can still separate phi into slow and fast modes and integrate, right? It's just ugly and complicated, but you know, that was my reasoning for introducing that fugacity in the first place. So if I imagine doing this kind of calculation on the lattice for phi, then upon integrating the fast modes, that term is going to be generated. Okay.
The other thing, the argument that you used here to say that the gradients of phi appear, because these correlation functions are for slow modes, which imply there are for large distances, right? So that you can make an expansion of. Or is the other way around?
No, it's just because so for example, if you take this exponential here, these factors here will decay very fast as x deviates from x prime. That's the reason for expanding.
Okay.
So you probably should try to work out those details in the tutorial. So let me forget about this term. Let's just see how y is renormalized and derive the RG flow equation for y, and then I'll simply write down the RG flow equation for the for t, okay? So this means that y prime, my new vortex fugacity, is equal to y times e to minus 1/2 g greater of 0, right? So remember that when we renormalization involves rescaling momenta, right? So I define k prime equals k times b, so which means that in real space, my new coordinates x prime are going to be x divided by b, right? So that will give me a factor of b squared from here, Okay. So this comes from x prime equals x divided by b. And then, so what is this g greater of zero? Let's evaluate this explicitly. So g greater of zero is equal to, so this is integral d to q 2 pi squared g greater of q, right? And g greater of q is just the coefficient of the inverse coefficient of the phi greater squared in the Gaussian part of the action when it's Fourier transformed, which is simply 1 over q squared, right? Well, 1 over t q squared. So I get integral d to q 2 pi squared. I've defined the g with a factor of 2 pi squared. So here it is, 2 pi squared and 1 over t q squared, right? And I'm integrating from lambda over b to lambda. So this 2 pi squared and 2 pi squared are canceled. Then I get 2 pi from the angular part of this integral. And then integral from lambda over b to lambda dq times q, which cancels power of q here. So I get dq divided by q. Yeah.
So you're just considering the second term and making the rescaling, but you should also rescale the fields, right? And since you have the field in the cos, why is just that the equation for y prime is?
No, I don't need to rescale the fields here because of two dimensions, right? So remember that the rescaling factor for the fields is b to d minus 2 divided by 2.
But here, so, how do you know that the anomalous dimension is 0?
Well, just...
Okay, you fix it by that term. From okay.
Right, yeah. So it will be 0, basically.
All right.
Yeah. So this is dq divided by q, which is log, right? So this is just equal to 2 pi divided by t times log of b, right? So then I get y prime is equal to y times b squared times e to minus pi divided by t log of b, right? So this is equal to y times b to 2 minus pi divided by t, okay? Right? And so now, again, I do the usual thing. I write B as E to delta L and expand to leading order in delta L as 1 plus delta L, right? And so then I get my equation, RG equation for Y. Okay, so the equation I get for y is dy dl is equal to, so that power of b, 2 minus pi over t, 2 minus pi divided by t times y, okay? So this is the RG equation for the vortex fugacity. So the equation for t, I will just I'll just write it down. Okay, so this is obtained from dealing with this term. proportional to y squared. And what we get is dt dl is equal to y squared divided by 2t. Okay? Yeah.
The dimension of y, or y is dimensionless, so and we know the first term.
Yeah, yeah. So these are, again, I've rescaled. Everything is fine. So t is also dimensionless, right? Because I've included j. When I wrote down the Sine-Gordon model, I've included j into the definition of t, right? So t is also dimensionless. So everything is fine.
My question is that we know the first term of the RG equations has to be the dimension.
Right.
And so is that satisfied here?
So let's see, what is the dimension of y? So 2 minus 1 t.
It's 2, right? Because you absorb a 1 over a squared.
I have done two things. I first absorbed j into t, right, making t dimensionless, but then I've also, my original fugacity was dimensionless, but then I absorbed 1 over a squared into y. So y now has dimension 2, right? But then to arrive at this equation, I've actually, I've skipped this part again because it's not important, but I've, this y here is actually y tilde, and y tilde is equal to y divided by lambda squared, okay? But I skipped that part. Well, it's just not important, okay? Okay, because I mean this equation is going to be the same in whatever units I write it, right? Because I have y, first power of y on the left and first power of y on the right. It only matters here, right? So if I did not do this rescaling, I would have y squared times y tilde is what? So I'd have lambda to the fourth here. Okay. Right? It's again the same thing that I did for the nonlinear sigma model. Maybe I should not have done that.
Doesn't lambda depend on L, though?
No, lambda is just the high momentum cutoff. That's just proportional to 1 over. No. So lambda is the original cutoff, which is 1 over a. Yeah. Okay. Lambda is 1 over a always. I mean, what I do at every step is I redefine my k's, right? So that k runs from 0 to lambda. Okay, so let's just keep it like this, like in my notes. But just remember that this is rescaled. Okay. So both in the way it's written, both t and y are dimensionless. Okay. Okay. So let's start analyzing those. So let's first find the fixed point, and there is only one in this case. So clearly the fixed point is just t equals pi divided by 2, right, and y equals 0. So the fixed point is So T star equals pi divided by 2. Y star is equal to 0. Okay. Yeah.
So, I mean, if I set Y star equals to 0, then T can be anything, right?
That's right.
No, in order for T to, the equations for T to be fixed, you need Y equals.
Yep. The first equation is Y equals 0, Y star equals 0, then T, independently of the value of T.
Yeah, but that's not a fixed point in Yt. That's just a fixed point in Y. You can always find a line, a flow line that's fixed. That doesn't mean that much.
Well, I mean, you are partly right. So let me just what I said is not quite correct. So let me just draw the flow diagram, and then you will see what I mean. You're right that there is actually an infinite number of fixed points here. I just said it incorrectly. So,
because you move away from T for pi.
So basically, if I solve these equations and find the flows, they look like this. So I have yt plane, right? So here is this point T star equals pi over 2. And y equals 0, it does have a special significance. Okay. And the flows have the following shape. So there is a line here, which we'll find later. So it's a straight line. Then, so the flows on the left of, to the left of this straight line, they actually all flow to y equals 0, okay? And so in this sense, so this part of the T line, right, all of those are fixed points. And then here I have another line, which is basically the mirror image of this one. It's not quite like that. Okay, and so to the right of this separatrix here, all the flows go to infinity, to infinite y. So we get this, and then so these are just to the left of pi over 2 you have stable fixed points on the line y equals 0, while here you have unstable fixed points. Okay, so you are exactly right. Yeah. Okay. So what is the meaning of this flow diagram? So this line, right, this straight line, which we will find later. So this is the line of precisely the line of Costa-Lethalis transitions. Okay. So to the left of this line, the vortex fugacity always flows to zero, to stable fixed point where fugacity is zero. So zero fugacity means zero density. Right. So what does it mean that the vortex density goes to zero under scaling? That's precisely what I mentioned before. So when the vortices are bound into finite size vortex anti-vortex pairs, when we do the coarse graining transformation, eventually that distance just goes to zero and there are no vortices or anti-vortices. Okay? So the vortex density here just flows to zero everywhere.
Going to zero doesn't mean they're really spread out, it means they're really close together.
Sorry?
So you would have thought that density being small would imply them moving further apart, not close together.
Well, I mean, they just disappear, right?
Yes.
It's not that the, so the point is that there are no free vortices, right? The vortices are always bound into pairs, right, with anti-vortices. And under, you know, if you look far away, basically from that plane, you don't see them. You don't see neither vortices nor anti-vortices because the phase winding far away from that dipole is absent. So it's like there are no vortices at all.
And they appear to disappear, but they're actually moving closer together.
Well, I mean, as I said, so when the vortex and an anti-vortex are a finite distance apart, right? If you look far away from that pair, you don't see that there is anything there, right?
So
it's like
an apparent density rather than a.
I mean,
In this model, as you rescale, you're actually changing the size of your.
I mean, this fugacity refers to fugacity of free vortices, right? Which has a finite winding, and the winding is something that's seen at all scales, right? This is seen at, you know, you can see the presence of a free vortex infinitely far away from that vortex. Okay, now on the other hand, on this side of the transition, when free vortices and anti-vortices appear, right, fugacity just flows to infinity, right? And that simply means that, okay, so you have free vortices, right? The distance between those free vortices is infinite at the point of the transition, right? But it becomes finite as you move to higher and higher temperatures. So then, if you start at some free vortex density, right, some average distance between the free vortices, and then start rescaling, those vortices get closer and closer to each other, precisely as you said, and then the density goes to infinity. Okay. Okay. So this line here is the line of phase transitions. So here the along this line, the fixed point is T star equals the Costa-Lizaules transition temperature is equal to pi over 2, right, in units of J. Okay. Now, why does this side of the transition, why does it appear that you have this infinite line of fixed points, right? So that's precisely why, you know, when we calculated the correlation function for T below TKT, we found that it looks like correlation function at a critical point. Right, it was always power law, but with an anomalous dimension, which was temperature dependent. That's precisely what the meaning of this is. It's indeed like a line of continuous line of critical points, right? But where the parameters of those critical points depend on temperature. Okay, so. That's why the correlation function below TKT looks like x to the eta, which depends on T, right?
So one thing with respect to that, we showed here that the anomalous dimension is zero, right? But doing this,
it's not, well, it's not the, this is the anomalous dimension corresponding to the transition. This is an anomalous dimension corresponding to this line of fixed points.
Oh, all right.
It's not the same thing. In fact, as we will see, you know, the transition does not look like a regular transition. We won't have things diverging as power loss. They diverge in a different way. Okay. Okay, so I guess in the last lecture tomorrow, we are going to analyze this RG flow more carefully and find how, for example, the correlation length diverges with temperature. Yeah?
I have a question. Can we treat vortex degrees of freedom and a regular spin wave degrees of freedom and partition function on the equal footing somehow?
Well, I mean, this is, I mean, it's a, yeah, it's a good question. So this duality transformation, precisely what it means is that I can actually separate them, right, and eliminate the spin wave degrees of freedom and, you know, rewrite my partition function in terms of vortex degrees of freedom on it. This is not always possible. Like, if I, let's say, had a nonlinear sigma model with n equals 3 in two dimensions, in that case, I would still have topological defects like hedgehogs. But in that case, there is no duality transformation analogous to this one that would allow me to rewrite the partition function in terms of hedgehogs only. So it's really a feature of 2D XY model. Okay, so see you tomorrow.